I cut it down. I cut the whole thing down. Even in the moment, I recognized the biblical nature of my labor. And while it made me laugh, I still hacked away at the fig tree. Well, I'm not sure it's really fair to call it a fig tree. More like a fig shrub or a fig pile of weeds. It was mixed in with all these other trees between our house and the neighbor's, and it was a scraggly mess. There were lots of spindly little fig shoots or trunks rising up from a shared lump of roots, but it didn't amount really to much of anything. It wasn't beautiful, and it definitely was not giving us any fruit. I had watched it for a couple of years, and while I confess that I had not spread manure around it, I had very low expectations. I wanted to grow something gorgeous and productive, and so I cut and I cut and I cut until it was all gone. I felt a little bad, but it seemed like Jesus was saying it was okay in this story right here. And so I didn't think a whole lot more about it. It is an odd gospel that we hear this morning, and one that feels tricky to parse. It's times like these when I would love to hear Jesus' tone of voice and see his body language as he taught with the rhyme and mystery that always weave through a parable. Jesus starts by talking with his followers about something terrible that has just happened. We don't know who is in the group that he's teaching, but it's clear that this horror is fresh on their minds, and they ask for help understanding it. The first century historian Josephus cited 5 different tragedies that they might be referring to here. And while the specifics may vary, most scholars agree that these Galileans were killed by the Roman government, possibly while participating in an act of resistance. After they were killed, then, Pilate, the governor, mixed their blood with that of animals who had been used in sacrifices. It was a horrible insult, adding to the pain already caused by their death. The specter of it was enough to haunt people, and also enough to make them shy away and keep their distance. Jesus has another word for them, as he so often does. Those Galileans, those folks these terrible things happened to, or maybe are happening to still, they are not other. They are not different from you, more sinful than you. They did not deserve it, he says, just as you would not deserve such persecution from leaders who are supposed to care for the people in their land. No one deserves such pain or insult. Do not separate yourselves from them, Jesus is saying. Do not pretend like you are any better or that you are immune to the ruler's cruelty. It is a stark and sobering call to remember that we belong to each other. To remember that, save for the tiniest twist of different DNA here or there, we are each other. In place of pushing each other away, instead of running from the pain of these others, Jesus brings what sounds like maybe a harsh teaching. Repent, he tells them. again and again, repent, repent. And given all the ways this simple word has been used as a weapon, how it's been used to shame and separate people, it's no surprise that it might cause some of us to shudder. There's so much more to it than we assume, though. So much that is life-giving and liberating. The word that is translated here as repent is in the Greek metanoia. It does not require self-flagellation. It's not about groveling or feeling awful about ourselves. Metanoia means, quite simply, to change one's mind and purpose, and thereby change how we engage the world, what we see, change how we live. It's about shifting our perspective, both literally and figuratively. It's about turning ourselves back toward God, toward the good life that God desires for us. And, especially given the gruesome start of this story, metanoia is about turning back toward each other. Jesus goes from that intense call to repent right into a parable, this odd little story about a fig tree that just won't cooperate. I suspect that to many of our modern ears, it sounds like he's giving us essentially permission to look out for number one, to try a bit and then give up when it no longer makes sense, to move on when we're not getting much out of the situation, which is curious and frankly confusing to me because this doesn't sound like the Jesus we generally hang out with. Jesus, who loves extravagance, who brings jug after jug of excellent wine to the party long after it was reasonable to do so. Jesus, who leaves the 99 sheep to go in search of the one who is lost. Jesus, who rolls out the red carpet for the last and least of these, the ones who can never repay him, the ones who will never help him get ahead because society is busy shunning them. Why is he suddenly advising us in these seemingly shrewd economics of cutting our losses? Well, it's possible we don't know fig trees very well. I had been rather pleased with my ruthless hacking that spring day several years ago. I'd made room for a whole passel of new plants, and now more sunshine could reach them also. And a little while later, I was out weeding and inspecting the new buds on my flowers when I saw them. Shoots. Lots of them, right where I had wrought such destruction, where I had cut that fig tree down, just like Jesus had said. But here they were springing up. There were at least as many as I had done away with, probably more, and they were already tall, surprisingly so. My eyes grew wide, my mouth fell open, and I began to laugh. And in that moment, it clicked. This strange parable cracked open for me, and it was as if I could see Jesus himself standing inside it, smirking, delighted, inviting me to step in. This parable is not about economics, or about maxing out the harvest, or cutting losses when it's probably not going to pan out. This parable is about life and about resurrection. I can hear his tone more easily now. Cut it down, he eggs them on. grinning, though I suspect maybe there's a bit of fire in his eyes. Just try to cut it down, see what happens. Maybe they knew. Maybe they'd seen this wonder of creation before. Destroy the temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Cut down the fig tree. Watch and see. What I hear Jesus offer today is a passionate invitation in 3 parts. First, do not let anyone be other, he urges. The way another suffers, it belongs to you too. They belong to you and you belong to them. The second part of the invitation is an extension of the first. Change your minds, friends. Repent, he insists. Change your perspective. Change the way you are aimed in the world. Change so that how you are living can lead you back to God. And the third part then is Jesus's promise that when we really embrace the truth of our kinship and change our ways, then, my God, then the life comes. Then the shoots rise up when no one expected them to make it. Then the new things happen when all we could see was destruction, maybe even at our own hands or at our own hand wringing. This is how the story goes, how the parable ends. And it makes my heart beat fast in my chest, that fledgling hope returning in spite of it all. The gospel is not about stretching profit or sidestepping loss. It's not about taking matters into our own hands so that we, on our own, can get ahead. No, it's about taking each other into our hands, into our embrace, taking the beauty and the pain both. It's about God taking us all in their hands and then setting us in the right direction, the direction that is together and pointed back to God. The gospel is about the new life that will come again no matter what. Cut down the fig tree, Jesus says, with faith and with glee. Cut it down if you like, because no matter what, that persistent, revolutionary, gorgeous new life will come.